everyone. Welcome to the Iron Boots Deep Dive, where we go over the nitty-gritty of the entirety of Legend of Zelda, where we'll go from the heights of Death Mountain to the depths of Lake Hylia. I'm your host, Justin Jay, and this is my co-host, Alex Petrulis. Alex, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Awesome. We're back, baby.
Yeah, we had a successful pilot. I guess, you know, all four people who listened to it.
Well, who knows? I think I did see some like totally random stats come up for people who have listened. But maybe one of those might have been...
I think they were people I told,
Mike
but
Weiss,
just
yeah,
far away.
Not Mike Weiss. Maybe it was Mike Weiss.
Yeah, though. It was Mike Weiss. Hey, Mike.
Hey there. I don't think I've seen you in like 7 years or something.
I doubt it's been that long. But speaking
know,
of seeing each other, we saw each other a couple days ago, right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Up in the Northwoods.
Yep. We were up in the North, got together with a bunch of our college friends. We played a lot of board games mostly.
Yes, it was epic.
Yeah. And then I forced you to play Cadence of Hyrule.
Yeah, well, you know, I actually, if I recall, I did want to play it. I saw you playing it, and
yeah,
I was like, you were like, what should we do? Because they were all playing that soccer board game.
Oh yeah, they're like, playing some soccer board game I didn't care about.
That game looked ridiculous.
They played it for like 5 hours.
And Garrett was like, Garrett's one of our friends who organizes this bros weekend, quote unquote, which is amazing.
Yeah,
he was like giving us crap for playing this game called Twilight Imperium, which is like a 6 hour game. But well, it's a really, you know, I actually really did want to play it.
It looks cool. I might play it, but man, the you guys played that game for a long time.
We did. We probably started at like what 7-8 p.m.
I think we literally played a board game and finished it before you guys had the rules finished explained.
Oh no, it's true. But once you get that all done, you know, it starts to move along. But we still played till like midnight or later, and then we also had to play in the morning for like a few hours. So it was probably a 6 hour game, which is about what they were playing on their soccer game, whatever. So
yeah,
maybe it wasn't 6 hours. I don't know how long their game lasted.
Yeah.
All that to say, we were trying to think of something to do while they were doing that. And I was like, I kind of want to play Cadence of Hyrule if I recall,
but I might've
had a few beers. So maybe, who knows?
A few. I think we all had a lot of beers.
We were drinking the whole weekend, man.
Yeah, good times.
Oh, it was great. It was like I played Crypt of the Necrodancer, which is a rhythm game, non Legend of Zelda related, where literally it's a really cool, unique idea where you're playing the game, you know, it actually does resemble Zelda where it's a top down, you know, kind of like the old
2D
Zeldas. Yeah, for sure. But you have to move in beat with the rhythm. And it's fun. But back when I played Crypt of the Necrodancer in like 2015, I was kind of like, I don't know if I like this.
It's hard. It's definitely
it's
not for
challenging.
Everyone. And,
yeah.
And I was watching you play, and I was just, because I have, I looked this up. I have 360 hours of Crypt of the Necrodancer, and then like 180 in Cadence of Hyrule. So I was watching you play, and I'm like,
I was also
like tired and a bit cranky and a bit drinking too much, and I was like, Alex, go to the right place. And you're like, how do I do this? Like, you just run into him. And I was not in my best behavior.
Well, no, I mean, you were actually, being pretty. I could tell you were restraining yourself, but you were being nice about it.
I know, but I need more patience just in general.
I was also just, I got to a point where I just wanted to explore the whole map, so I was like avoiding all the enemies near the end. But I actually want to sit down and play it like start to finish.
Also, the latency issues were
they
weren't great. I was playing it, and I'm like, what the heck is wrong with this?
Yeah,
it was weird.
I could still play it. I just had to like press it on the offbeat, basically. It was like,
ugh, gross.
Dunch, 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 dunch. Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah. I can tell that I would like it if I just dedicated to it and just.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like, I'm just sitting down to try this.
Yeah.
Like, for an hour.
Well, but I love the art style. Yeah, art style is great. But Alex, I have something to tell you.
Yes.
We're not talking about that game today.
What game are we talking about, Justin?
We're talking about original 1986 Legend of Zelda for the Nintendo Entertainment System, or if you're Japanese, the Famicom, the family computer. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we both played it. We didn't both just play it. We both beat it for the first time, right?
Yep.
You'd never beaten it before.
No, the most I had done was like probably entered a dungeon, explored the overworld for 10 minutes.
Like, yeah.
You know, a decade ago.
Yeah.
And just quickly getting intimidated and being like, there's no way, this is way too hard.
Oh yeah. I beat it for the first time myself, and we're going to talk all about our experiences and how this happened, or our background and stuff that. Go ahead.
Well, the unfortunate part is that's a long story, but I lost all the notes that I took on the game, which I'm pissed about, because I had like a page of notes on my, you know, smartphone notes app. My screen cracked. I can like kind of get access to the phone using like Samsung Dex, where it communicates with the computer, but like now not even that's working. So I have to get an adapter to like maybe try and,
dude, it's not worth it. You played the game. I'm going to jog your memory. I took so many notes.
Good. And when you were just talking, it was already sparking like some stuff that I'm remembering now.
Yeah. That's what I figured would happen.
What?
I figured that would happen. I knew your memory would kick in.
Yeah. Let's get into it for sure. Let's deep dive into The Legend of Zelda.
I guess we got to start with your background. So, like, do you remember the first time you played this game?
You know, I'm pretty sure I probably played it on the Wii Virtual Console, I want to say.
Do you know a year? Oh, it's the Wii.
Like, the original Wii.
Yeah. Okay.
But my most vivid memory of actually trying to play it was at UW Eau Claire. I think it was my sophomore or junior year. Where one of our best friends, Dave Keller, was staying with us, like in the Towers dormitory, like over winter break. It was winter in session. So I was taking a few classes.
Can't you only take like one or two classes or something like that?
Well, actually.
Oh, no.
I think it was an editing. It was like a Dreamweaver editing class where like.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, it was basically video editing, which, funnily enough, you know, came into handy. Like, gotta put my phone on silent. who cares what class it was? Some stupid video editing class. That was a great winter break though, because Dave was there. We actually played through a number of Zelda games. I'm pretty sure we played all of Twilight Princess. I remember playing that one, but I also remember watching him play original Legend of Zelda, and I was like, dude, you're insane. How are you doing this?
How do you play this game?
Because he like knows the in and outs of the game, and he knows how to play it.
Amazing.
So I probably tried playing it at that point. That's like the first vivid memory I have.
Yeah, I could see Dave being like, hey, you want to try this out? You're like, I don't know. I don't do 2D Zeldas.
Exactly.
I remember that used to be your attitude.
Yeah. Those are good. Those are some good memories, though, of playing that game and Zelda general. What was your first experience with it,
The
original game?
I believe the first time I ever actually played it, I'm not sure if I played it or I watched someone else play it, but I was in elementary school, and at the time, I was friends with this guy named Dean, who had a sleepover for his birthday party, and we were all just there, and he had his Nintendo, and he's like, I'm going to play Legend of Zelda. I'm like, what is this game? And, like, I don't remember really much more than that. I remember being, like, confused. I'm like, how do you play this game? This game seems dumb. But I think the thing I remember, which is sort of in the creation of this game, is like it had the gold cartridge.
Oh.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about because I have it in this box, I think right next to me, actually.
Really?
Yeah, it's funny. I don't have an NES, but I do have the golden cartridge.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they got you, man. Like, yeah. No other. There's only two gold cartridges for the NES, as far as I'm aware. There might be some others, but Legend of Zelda 1, Legend of Zelda 2, they were gold cartridges. And I don't know why, but man, it stood out. And I mean, they continued the trend for not for all of them, but they went with it.
Well, they did for Majora, actually.
Yeah, I have that one. They also did for Ocarina of Time, because did Majora the first come edition. I'm sorry, what?
Did Majora come out in anything but a gold cartridge? I thought it was just
the difference gold cartridge. I don't think it did, but it did have a difference if it was just a normal label or the lenticular label.
Oh.
I don't remember which one I have.
Holographic?
Yeah.
Lenticular. Well,
lenticular is like where it has like two images and you can like rotate it to see different images.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's a holographic. It's holographic.
I don't think that's what it's called. No, holographic just means it's shiny.
We always called it holographic. I guess I know.
Maybe it's also holographic.
I don't know, man. I know the Pokemon cards holographic just means shiny or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's what we always just called it cards. Holographic. I don't know. Lenticular's cool. Let's go with that.
Okay. Yeah. So that definitely stuck out. So that was the first time I remember playing Legend of Zelda. Okay. I think, and then I remember a couple times throughout the years I gave it another shot because I think I unlocked it in Animal Crossing by cheat codes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you can play it that way. And I like played it for a bit and then I'm like, well, I'd rather be playing Animal Crossing because I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then I got, it was in the Triforce collection. And then I played it on there. I played probably like one dungeon. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. This game is impossible.
It's, you know, and that's something we should talk about.
Oh, we definitely will.
Just the difficulty curve.
Yeah, that's in my notes. Mm-hmm. And then I think the first time I was doing field work in California for 2 months. And I was basically living in a hotel room on my own. And I had the Nintendo Switch online, which had Legend of Zelda, and you're like, and I was just pretty much, I would come back in this hotel room, not really having anything to do, and I'm like, I've always wanted to beat this game. I feel like I'm not a true Zelda gamer if I haven't beaten this game. So I gave it a shot, and I got all the way to Death Mountain, and I couldn't, which is the final dungeon of the game, and I just could not get to Ganon. I just couldn't do it, no matter what I did, and I'm just like, this stinks. I'm so close. And then that was in 2018.
And that was on Nintendo Switch?
Yeah, not Nintendo Switch Online. So if you got a subscription to Nintendo Online.
And that's what you played on this time as well, right?
Yes, it is.
So you couldn't beat it even with the rewind feature?
We will.
Or were you not using that at that time?
I don't think it had it then.
Yeah, okay. Probably didn't.
So we'll talk about that in a bit. Do you have any other, you talked about what you, your first time and the time of day, but do you have any other times you really, really gave this a good go or anything like that?
No, no way, dude.
Okay.
Link to the Past, I did, actually a few separate times throughout my life, like at least two other times, I actually did try to sit down and play Link to the Past.
Okay.
But even that game, I just get stuck, dude. I think it's just because of the 2D nature of it. I get stuck and I'm like, how am I supposed to know how to do this? And I get all frustrated. I'm like, I'll just go.
I don't think that's the 2D thing, because I discovered something about this that that kind of affected it. So I actually found the original manual scans. It's the instruction booklet, which I think was in the original game.
Okay.
Oh, excuse me. And I think they have this online and the Nintendo thing, so like you could like find the game manual. I think. I don't know. Because at the very bottom of this document, it's blurry. There it is. Original instruction manuals included with this software are digital reproductions of the original printed manual. So I think they included this. But Alex, do you know how many pages this manual is?
Oh God, not over 100. There's no way.
It's not quite that bad. Okay. I'm actually looking for the page numbers. There we go.
86.
No, hold on. I got to count because it's got a number here, but it doesn't.
Does it actually give you hints like where to find certain things in the overworld and stuff like
that? It is 49 pages.
How many?
49.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So it probably gives you secret, you know, hidden locations to guess.
Yeah, it actually gives you a map for the first two dungeons. And it gives you an overworld map. Yeah.
In the instruction booklet.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy, dude.
I just looked this up before we started recording. I'm like, oh, I should have the manual. Because, yeah. I know they give you some hints in the manual. But I'm used to those manuals from, the late 90s and early 2000s where the book's, 10 pages and tells you what the buttons do.
Yeah, or they tell you what the starting items are, what they do, maybe.
No, this has got, all the enemies listed in here. Oh, it's got all the bosses' names. Wait, does it have all the bosses?
Every single one? Wow. This is for Link to the Past or original?
Original.
Okay.
Legend is all. The game we played this time.
Episode. Times are different in the 80s.
Yeah. They put so much in here. It tells you about the underworld, which is just the dungeons.
It's got called all these the underworld?
Monster names. The dungeons underworld.
Don't gloss over that. What?
Okay. Here, let me read this.
Now that
Link's found an entrance to the labyrinth, he can at last begin his fight to find the Triforce fragments. Once Link steps inside the underground labyrinth, the above ground radar at the top left screen turns the radar of the labyrinth. Oh.
Okay.
I think they mean in a very literal sense, like it's under the earth.
Well, you didn't say underworld right there.
Yeah, because it says labyrinth a bunch. I just don't think they're using the word dungeons at this point.
Yeah. No, that's cool.
Yeah, I don't think they really say much more besides that.
It's still cool.
I basically only had time to scan this because I really did not think there'd be much to this manual.
You know what? You just when you were reading that though, the use of the word labyrinth is interesting because, obviously there are a lot of comparisons from the original game to Breath of the Wild. And there are those puzzles. I think there's four of them, but they're there are literal labyrinths in Breath of the Wild, those giant towers that it's like a maze, basically.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder if that kind of might maybe inspired, because the dungeons in the original Legend of Zelda are it's literally a maze. It's just a big maze with enemies.
That's what makes it hard.
There's a few puzzles too, but those labyrinths really do remind me of the dungeons in Legend of Zelda, the Breath of the Wild labyrinths. Because they are pretty simplistic, and they're literally mazes.
Mm-hmm.
And those are some of my favorite parts of the game, exploring those labyrinths, because there's tons of guardians in them. Well, that part where you drop down in the labyrinth in Breath of the Wild into that giant cavern room at the bottom, and then there's you land there, and then within 5 seconds, there's literally seven guardian dots all over you, and you have to sprint. Do you remember that part?
That is one of the best parts of the game,
and there's even memes about it, or maybe a TikTok videos about it, where Link drops down, and then you're just immediately surrounded by at least seven or ten guardians that are stationary. I think they're probably all stationary ones or something. Or
I don't remember.
It's crazy, but anyways, there's some great moments in those labyrinths.
Let me go back to this manual. It tells you all the items. It tells you that you can upgrade your sword and because as a kid, I didn't have the manual and I didn't know any of this stuff. I didn't know any of this. It tells you that you can find blue and red rings. Those are going to reduce damage you take from enemies. So I didn't know that.
Right.
And they got there's wooden arrows and silver arrows. And I would have never known to find a silver arrow.
Right.
I would have never known about these candles. I would never know about these potions. I would have never known that you can upgrade your sword two times.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it tells you everything. Here's the game.
Does. It's all here.
Well, they probably just, they knew that this is a pretty new experience for most people. We're creating a pretty new kind of game where you can just go anywhere. So let's give them a little help.
Yeah.
Once Ocarina hit shelves, it was this is a cinematic experience, basically, where things are just kind of explained to you in the game. It eases you into it. When you're playing a game like Legend of Zelda, and you're just plopped in the world, and you can go anywhere. You can literally go anywhere. The player needs a little help. And that's probably why I didn't do very well, because there was no guide for me to read. They literally give you a little guide.
Because we're a bunch of dumb kids that didn't know better.
Well.
Yeah, I guess before we keep going in, we should maybe hear about the production of this game.
Yeah.
It originally came out in 1986 in Japan and 1987 in North America and PAL, which is that like basically Pacific and Australia or something like that?
I don't know, actually.
And then I don't remember what PAL means, because I don't think that's Europe, because Europe is just EU. Whatever, it doesn't matter. But it was made by Shigeru Miyamoto. Programmed by, oh boy, I'm going to say all these names wrong. Programmed by
Takahashi.
Toshihiko Nakago. Oh my gosh, I apologize. You're good?
Nakago.
Yasunari Soijima. This is an initial.
Okay.
Marui, written by Takashi Tezuka.
But not Takeshi. That's a different thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm referencing Takeshi's Challenge.
Oh, I know.
You remember that.
Yeah, that really BS Nintendo game.
That's crazy.
Keiji Turi, and the music by Koji Kondo.
The man.
Love Koji Kondo.
The godfather of video game music.
Yeah.
Our lives are all different because
if I remember correctly, I think I didn't include this in my notes, but the original Zelda theme, like the overworld theme, like you know what it is, right? Yeah. That was supposed to be Bolero, like the song Bolero.
Yeah. I also listened to Did You Know Gaming Zelda.
I think I heard that somewhere else too, but yeah, like they were gonna use it, but then like he thought the copyright was public domain by that point, but it wasn't. And then I guess Koji Kondo just had to make up something on the fly, and that's how we get the Legend of Zelda theme.
I mean, there are obvious influences like to Bolero and to other music.
I actually don't know what Bolero sounds like. Oh, maybe I have heard it.
It's definitely not as good as the Legend of Zelda theme, so I'm glad he wrote it. No, seriously.
I wonder, how would it have sounded like if it was 8-bit? Do you think somebody's like put Bolero into 8-bit?
Yeah, possibly.
Okay. All right. So like that's kind of just how it was. That's just who made it. Apparently, it's funny you were talking about Labyrinth earlier, because apparently you know how Miyamoto came up with the idea of Legend of Zelda, right?
I sure do.
Yeah, he was just exploring the woods as a kid, just finding stuff.
Specifically the Japanese countryside, which which is very hilly and has like literal caves and stuff that you probably explored.
But I actually found something I didn't know. It's funny you mentioned Labyrinth, because he got the ideas for like the dungeons from like confusing houses with like a labyrinth of rooms and stuff.
Really?
Like that.
I didn't know
sliding
that.
Doors. And it's just so funny you said labyrinth, because I'm like, hey, that's what he said when he developed this game. So
you read Labyrinth from the manual, and then I was talking about the labyrinths and Breath of the Wild.
That's true, because that's why he came up with. I think that's why they used the word.
I mean, he probably wrote the dang manual. So,
I mean, it's possible.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's just kind of like.
Yeah. What I really love about. Just. Also, Miyamoto was not even a game developer per se back then.
No,
I mean,
not really.
Game developers almost that term basically didn't exist. It was basically programmers and artists. And we were actually watching over Bros Weekend, Video Game Donkey, a YouTube channel about, it's a comedy. Mostly
funny
comedy.
Guy.
Yeah, super
funny.
Funny guy. Look into it if you haven't already. But. He was talking about when Miyamoto like created Donkey Kong, which I think was probably his first thing.
Thing before that, but it was not notable.
And he hadn't even invented Mario yet. But basically, Miyamoto was a his like major was industrial design. Like
that was crazy.
Yeah, so he probably knew how to draft architecture and stuff like that. But he also had illustration skills, and that's how he came up with the designs for like Donkey Kong and Mario. He was very, very good at evoking character in art.
Yeah.
So, he was like a Disney kind of guy. He could draw Mickey Mouse and like perfectly. Like his drawings were amazing. Like watching him draw was like beautiful. Like he'd just get everything first try, first stroke. Like awesome.
Okay.
And it's just cool that he did games. Like it goes to show, like, just because your major is something doesn't mean you have to do that exact thing. Like the reason I think he was so successful is because he wasn't a game developer. He was like the artist, and then he just asked the programmers, hey, is this possible, can we do this? And then the programmers would be like, well, I didn't think of it that way, but yeah, maybe we can try and do that. So it just speaks to the game design process and how I don't know how that all works, but anyways, shall we get into it?
Yeah, well, let's start with the plot, because the plot is pretty basic. This manual actually tells you a lot about the plot, because if you don't know the game, there looks like there is no plot. But the basic plot is Ganon was leading an army with the Triforce of Power, and he plunged the world into darkness, and then Zelda split the Triforce of Wisdom into eight fragments and hit him. And then at some point, Impa is technically in this game in the lore, a character who shows up in other games, but not in this one, just in the manual. She is just look around, and she finds Link somewhere. And then, I'm just summarizing real quick. She fights Link. Link fights some beasts, and then she's like, go find the Triforce. And then he does. They're going through a bunch of dungeons. Goes and defeats Ganon, and then the Triforces are reunited, and there's no Triforce of Courage in this game. Only Wisdom and Power.
Right. That is so interesting.
Yeah.
It never mentions Courage.
Sure doesn't.
That's so weird.
Yep.
Like, what happened?
My guess is this game technically takes place in the decline timeline.
Yeah, where Link loses in Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, it's so weird he's that a descendant. Nintendo did this.
And the world is basically a post-apocalyptic hellscape.
I guess. Yeah,
well, I mean, that might be an exaggeration.
I've got the that sounded bad. I've got the Zelda Encyclopedia right here, and I'm looking at towns and villages in the database. And this is there's like a bunch of entries about towns and stuff. And there's only one for Legend of Zelda that says the Kingdom of Hyrule still exists in this era of decline, a fraction of its former glory. But Link does not visit the castle or any towns during this particular adventure. Only the wilds and dungeons of Hyrule. Any people he meets live in caves, forced into hiding by monsters.
Awesome.
That's all it says. That's the plot of the game. It's pretty simple.
My Zelda encyclopedia is over in my bookshelf, so...
I'll have to make sure I have
that at my desk, yeah.
Yeah.
I brought up images, like, of the original art. Like, the 80s art from this game,
manual. Reading. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of it's in the manual, but it's, like... It's some awesome stuff. I mean, it looks retro.
It's very cartoony. Like
those,
but like
yeah, it looks like those cartoons you would see in the 80s. It's great, though. It's a lot of good...
It's good art,
A really epic... Like, here's a Reddit one. I'm going to send that to you.
Okay.
Like, Link is holding up part of the Triforce like against like this gigantic fiery demon, which is supposedly Ganon. And it looks like it's from the original... like... booklet or something, but of course Ganon doesn't look like a thing like that in the game.
I'm looking. It might be in here. Yeah, I don't see it in here. That's okay.
Regardless, it's interesting to hear the story they chose to kind of give the original Legend of Zelda, because obviously when the game first came out, they weren't thinking of any kind of timeline stuff. They were just like,
right,
here's a new game. Like,
yeah.
Like, it is interesting, though, because, like you said, the people are just hiding in the caves, and there's, like, it's just so weird.
And they have very cryptic quotes.
Yeah. Like, it's almost like they were thinking ahead, like, this is a ruined kingdom or something, and...
Right. Well, maybe. I couldn't tell you.
I think something that was in my notes when I was playing the game was, like, I liked how each, like, when you're exploring the overworld and you get to one of the entrances to the dungeon, all the entrances are different, which I wasn't expecting. I was kind of expecting them all to just be pretty much the same, like a stump or whatever.
Right.
Because I think one of them is a giant stump, but they're all actually surprisingly different, and I think every single one is different.
I don't think there's just a stairway under a bush.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's like, isn't that the hardest one? That's like the,
I don't remember. That's
level eight.
It's definitely not eight. Eight's Death Mountain. Okay.
World Wait, eight, is it? I call it.
Hold on.
God, this chair, I need to.
I don't know. Maybe it is. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Oh, yeah, that's probably the lion. That's probably eight.
Oh, that's right. They're called, like, the lion, the snake.
Though. Yeah, I've got all the names written down here.
And that was just the shape of each dungeon. It's literally just the shape of it.
Yes.
On the map. Like, it looks like a lion, or it looks like a demon.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Generally, though, just to finish that thought, I liked that you could actually see them putting an effort of, like, giving the game some character. Mm-hmm. Like, when I start out playing, I'm like, okay, this game is just going to be one. I'm just going to have to get through it, you know? But
do you think your expectations were, like, exceeded because you weren't expecting much? Oh, okay.
Oh, totally. Okay. I like to keep my expectations low when I can. Sometimes it's hard to do that, but I'm glad I was able to do it this time. And
you're surprised by this game?
Yeah, maybe. Okay, so maybe it was the fact that, like, the game actually looked vivid, vibrant. It looked pretty vibrant being on the Switch. When I played it back on the
tube TV,
When I played it on the original Wii Virtual Console, it looked faded and old and, like, I wasn't very inspired. But I think just playing on the Switch, and you could tell they made sure it looked vibrant. Like, sure, it's simple, but the pixel art was at least vibrant, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah. It was,
and the controls were not as bad as I remembered. Still not great. And
it helps if you play with the D-pad over a joystick.
Even then, dude.
Yeah.
Even then. And we, you know, I could touch on that right now, because that was another thing from my notes was, like,
okay.
So the game was designed on a grid, obviously.
Yep.
Because the hardware necessitated that pretty much. Everything is on the grid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, I can't remember if it's an exact 16:9 grid or what the ratio was.
Real quick.
But it's interesting because Link actually, he moves on that grid, but he also moves on the half grid, I believe. So he can go on the grid spaces, and then he can go on, like, the grid lines, basically.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's something you couldn't even do in original Pokemon, like, all the way up until, like, Gen 5 or something.
Yeah, so it was interesting, though, because you could, this is kind of hard to explain, but say you're Link, you're in the middle of the screen, right? You want to go up. If you just press up, he'll go up. Now, if you're traveling into the next grid space and you want to go left, he actually won't go left yet. If you press left, he'll continue to go up, and then Link will go left when he enters the next grid space that he can go left.
Oh, I don't think I noticed this.
Yeah, and it drove me crazy.
Oh, really?
Like, I was like, ugh. Yeah, because you are locked in that grid. Right. Most people can't really tell. But I was trying to make really fine movements at certain points, and you just can't. Link is forced to go up until he can go left because he has to be on that grid.
Oh, wow.
And something also, and I don't know if this was just me imagining things, but I felt like sometimes when I was attacking with the sword, and maybe just glitching it out a little bit, but sometimes I could attack enemies in the next square over to me adjacent. And I just, that was something I still wasn't super happy with, was I felt like the hits weren't always landing, and sometimes they would land when I wouldn't
that
expect it.
That definitely happened to me.
It's just like an imperfection of the game. It's, you know, they were, yeah, I mean, they were pioneering this path. Yeah.
Exactly.
So that was really interesting to feel. And I'm really excited to play Link to the Past to see how that compares.
Yeah, two games,
to see
though.
Just how much more accuracy and movement you have.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I know, we're going to have to get through Adventure of Link first.
I play. Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. As someone who's played a lot of Link to the Past, mm-hmm. like, you feel so much freer and more fluid when you're doing any sort of sword actions and traversal.
Right.
Like, it's like night mm-hmm. and day how much more fluid that game is. It's crazy.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but for me, you know, you want to know my hot take about this game that I actually told you a little about?
Yeah, tell it to me.
I think this game is a proto bullet hell.
Oh.
Yeah.
At certain times, I could see that. I've never heard you say that, no.
Okay. I might have intentionally not told you that, so I could tell you right now. Yeah. Yeah, because when I'm playing the game, mm-hmm. I've been playing a lot of Enter the Gungeon. For those who don't know, bullet hell is basically you got a single character, usually a single character, and there's just a ton of like bullets on screen that you have to just dodge and then also shoot back at the same time. And when I'm going through those dungeons, there is so much stuff flying at me. I got enemies who are moving around who will just do any damage if they hit you. They're a bullet in themselves.
Sure.
And then there's guys shooting magic. Those are bullets. You got Octorot shooting little pellets or whatever at you. That's a bullet. You got guys shooting arrows. That's more bullets. And you don't know when they're coming out. And you're moving around. And all you've got is just like this little like single sword that sticks out a bit.
It gets insane,
and sometimes,
dude.
And if you got full health, then you shoot bullets. And you also have a bow, which uses rupees to shoot arrows, which is funny.
I found that interesting, yeah.
I didn't one like arrow it, per but I think it was a technical limitation.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I'm so sure. Like the whole game, I'm just like, oh, God, I'm playing a bullet hell. And I think actually why I was able to beat it this time is because I have been playing so much Enter the Gungeon recently that I'm used to bullet hells now.
Right, that's interesting.
But this is still like an old type. And I don't think I've ever seen anyone say that this game is a bullet hell. Everyone's like, yeah, it's an action-adventure game. Which is true, it is.
Yeah, just for those of us who might not know what a bullet hell is.
I just described it.
Well, okay, maybe I was zoning out. But okay, so is a bullet hell? Because like Undertale is kind of like a bullet hell,
where it's a bullet hell RPG in
a sense. Because it transitions into the bullet hell phase, which is a different combat phase.
Yeah.
But
Binding of Isaac is a pretty famous bullet hell. A lot of those spaceship games where you're flying your ship around
Galaga.
Bullet hell. Galaga is that? I always forget which one Galaga is. So I'm a little.
It's the one where you're a ship. And you just move on the 2D plane and dodge and shoot. I thought that was the true definition of a bullet hell. Like, I didn't think Binding of Isaac was technically a bullet hell.
Binding of Isaac is definitely a bullet hell.
Okay.
Edge of the Gungeon's a bullet hell. And there's literally a stage called Bullet Hell in that game, which is so hard. I haven't even beaten it.
I didn't know if that's interesting, though. There are definitely moments where you're like overwhelmed by the amount of stuff coming at you, for sure. Like I just have to run away. Like I just can't handle all of it.
Oh, but yeah.
In a dungeon, there isn't always a place you can run away, so it's tough.
I think the big mistake a lot of people make in this game is I have to fight every enemy, and the answer is no, you don't.
Exactly.
Sometimes
unless you're in the
dungeon.
Yeah.
Well, no, not even then. Sometimes you can just keep walking.
Okay.
You're like, there's some guys, I'm ignoring them. Yeah. I'm just going to keep going. Don't need to touch these guys whatsoever.
Exactly. And, you know, when I was doing the guide, following the guide at certain dungeons.
I used a guide the entire way.
There were brief parts of the game where I didn't use a guide, like maybe one or two of the early dungeons where I'm like, you know what? I don't need to follow the guide to a T. I'm just going to race through this dungeon.
Which some of the dungeons I didn't use.
Well, I did that for one dungeon. I can't remember which one it was, but... after I beat it, I'm like, wait, am I missing out on an item? And I was like, oh, yeah, sure enough. I looked at the guide. I'm like, I just missed an item. Because you don't actually have to use the item in the dungeon. I'm like, oh, man, okay.
That sucks when that happens. I had to do that.
It's interesting, though, because, like, they don't even expect you to, like, they don't necessitate you using that item in the dungeon, like, at all. Like, probably make it easier, but.
Yeah.
And I will say this about the guide as well. I was using the Zelda Dungeon guide.
I was too.
Yeah, I like using Zelda Dungeon because I really just like those guys, and I like their videos on YouTube as well. They do a bunch of like tier lists and stuff. Tier Force Heroes, they call it.
Oh yeah.
They start out that guide, basically they're like, all right, let's get you everything you need to really yep. prepare for the game and just like let you fly through the entire game. And I didn't realize that as I was, you know, doing all this stuff.
Cause I appreciate it's
like
a, it.
Yeah, it's like an item roundup. Like, let's get you super powerful so you can just start like annihilating these dungeons. And I'm like, hold on a second.
I never felt like I was annihilating a dungeon. Well, never. Not really? Once. Yeah.
Well, maybe I was using the rewind feature too much.
Yeah, we should talk about awesome. The rewind feature before we're going to keep bringing it up. Cheating. So yeah. It is absolutely cheating. Yeah. I suck at this game. Like, there is so, like,
I've got no way I would get through it.
I literally wrote in my notes on one of these levels, I hate this level so much. I swore so much. And I was using the rewind function.
Yeah.
It basically, in the Switch Online, if you hold both the shoulder buttons, I think ZL and LR, mm-hmm. I think it will pop up a little bar at the bottom, and you can just rewind your game back until mm-hmm. you get to a spot you feel good. So what would happen is I'd be in a dungeon, I'd just get destroyed by monsters, and my health goes down, beeping like crazy, get hit, die. I just hit both shoulder buttons, rewind all the way back to like, all right, I have 6 hearts now. Maybe that will, that's going to mm-hmm. help me. Right. And there were times, even with cheating, where I'm like, this game is so freaking hard. How did any children beat this game in 1986? I don't understand.
It was a bunch of children who were used to playing arcade games where you die like every 2 minutes.
Yeah, you know, I guess so. This time you didn't have to pay a quarter or whatever.
And that's just how it was. Yeah, like I can just go again for free because you're at home.
Dude, I don't have time to play games that hard, you know.
And I think they know that. That's why they released that feature. Well, now they do.
Yeah, you could easily play this game for like years, probably. Because I think Dave, our friend who has beaten this game, told me he like played it as a kid, and it took him like a year or two to actually beat it. Don't quote me on that; I could be entirely wrong. Well, but he told me it took him a long time.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably playing it, if I were to guess, probably back in like 2002 or something.
Possibly. Probably like, even younger, honestly. Knows? I think he told me he did it in elementary school.
Dang. Well, if that's the case, there definitely wasn't any kind of internet to help him out.
Probably.
I mean, the internet existed for sure. I remember in like second grade, like getting cheat codes for Diddy Kong Racing. Like
from like the Scholastic Book Fair?
Well, from like a computer lab in a high school, because I took gymnastics classes in like a high school, and I remember my dad picked us up. We actually walked over to the computer lab. It was open, and we went in there, and my dad like helped us. Like, I don't even think Google was a thing yet. I don't know how we found the website, but
AskJeeves.com.
I'm gonna have to ask him if he remembers, because
there's no way your dad remembers that.
Probably not. I don't know. My dad has a pretty good memory.
Well, actually, maybe he remembers what search engines were back then.
Yeah, I mean,
the only thing I can think of is Ask Jeeves.
I do remember that one. But even that was like 2004 or something.
I remember like we'd go to Scholastic Book Fair and you could just buy a book of cheat codes.
Oh, yeah.
I remember seeing one at Half Price Books and I'm like, hey, I had this. This is weird. And now it's like, who would buy it? No one would ever publish a book like that. That's insane.
Man, that Scholastic Book Fair was awesome. There were always so many cool books.
I gotta show you a video about that later.
But the most popular were always like the I Spy books.
The Guinness Book of World Records.
That's a big one. A lot of kids like the stupid, what was it, Captain Underpants thing or whatever.
Oh, I like those.
You were one of those kids, huh?
Yeah, I was. I totally was.
It just wasn't my thing, but that's fair. That's fine. I also didn't like South Park or WWE or anything.
South Park is not for kids. It's for adults.
Yeah, but there were a few kids in my class.
Oh, the bad
kids? Dude, there were even... My best friend... Yeah, my best friend from, like, before I moved to Wisconsin, even, was into Beavis and Butthead. And my parents didn't like it. He would always, like, put his shirt over his head and be like, I am Cornholio or whatever. And talk about his bunghole. And my parents were like, we like you're friends with him, but like, anymore. don't be like him, please. Anyways.
Yeah, back to Zelda.
To get back on the rails here.
I like when you start the game, you're just in a field. You're just there, yeah. And you're like, well, there's a thing I can go into. And you go in, there's an old man. He says, it's dangerous to go alone. Here, take this. Take he gives this. You a sword. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, I guess I should stab things with this.
And it's technically the wooden sword?
Yeah, wooden sword.
Is it called that?
I have the manual open.
There you go. Because eventually you get the magic sword. Technically, it's called, right?
That's the third one, I think.
Okay, so the second one is the white sword or something?
Yes, the second one is called the white sword. Yeah. But I have it right here. I've got I found a page that's just Legend of Zelda old man quotes. And the white sword, the quote he gives you is, master using it and you can have this. And all I can think is, mm-hmm. that's where the master sword name comes from.
Right?
Yeah.
Probably. That's such a weird way of wording it, though. Like, why would they write this sentence like that?
I think it's because using it. You can go in there and not be able to get the sword. Like, you have to have enough hearts. If you don't have enough hearts, you can't get the sword. So if you master the sword you currently have, then you can have the white sword.
It's still just a weird way to... It's almost like they tried translating it from Japanese and didn't do a great job.
Oh, yeah. How about something like this? Pay me for the door repair charge.
Exactly.
Boy, this stuff is sure expensive. Let's play money-making game. Show this to the old woman.
Yeah, right.
Secret is in the tree at the dead end.
Mm-hmm.
Eastmost Peninsula is the secret.
Yeah.
Yeah, just there's just some weird.
It's they're all very
just weird
cryptic
stuff in here.
I just I love the.
I bet
the
you'd
vibe.
Like to have more bombs.
Yeah. Well, that comes up a few times throughout the game where you're in a dungeon and basically that's where you buy the bomb upgrades because you need more bombs in the dungeon.
Which helps.
There was once where I'm like, don't really need
something
it.
That drove me crazy about this game is there are no indicators for bombable walls. I mean, it's always the center of the wall when it's in the dungeon, but if you're in the overworld, you're just like, I get that they're like, oh, we want it to be explorative and you talk to your friends, but it's just like, if you go on the screen, it's like, hey, bomb the wall, and then the corner, you're like, well, this wall's like 10 feet long, where do I put the bomb?
It's ridiculous. It was part of the marketing scheme or whatever, I get it.
But. Well, it's definitely something they fixed in later games. They're like, you know what, maybe this was hard. So
maybe this wasn't the most fun thing. Like a lot of kids are probably missing out on this.
Yeah.
That's definitely the main reason I was using the guide too, because I knew there was a lot of stuff like that where
I could have wasted thousands of bombs. I didn't have time to just farm rupees, you know.
We have careers, we have full-time jobs, we can't be
I've got other games to play and what else I literally finished I don't want to get too off topic here, but I literally finished the Final Fantasy VII remake today, so right before this.
Well, you didn't finish the whole thing because it's not all finished yet.
Well, I still have to do the DLC, but I rolled credits.
Wait. You didn't fight One Winged Angel, Sephiroth, final.
Yeah, you do. They put him at the...
They finished the whole thing?
No, they changed it. They make it so you fight Sephiroth at the end regardless. Don't worry about it. This is not a Final Fantasy VII podcast.
Hey, we can talk about it, though. I'm sure a lot of our listeners like it.
I'm not going to spoil it. It's new enough. Okay. It's new enough.
And there's two parts now, right?
At least. There might be a third, as far as I know.
Right. But anyway. It's not the Sephiroth battle where you fight him in space and he's destroying Earth. Okay. Spoilers.
I'm still confused by it, so I don't really want to talk about it because I don't get it, and that's not what this is about.
So
you want to talk about the dungeons now, or do you got more to say about the overworld and other stuff?
Just to finish a thought here. I almost wish that I wouldn't have used the guide to start out. I got to be honest.
Okay.
I would have I wanted the first few dungeons to be a little more challenging because, you know, since I followed the guide and it built, you know, it built me up nice and good, it made it too easy, to be honest. I would have actually liked to do more exploring on my own rather than just go here, go to this square, get all these upgrades.
Yeah.
That part I do kind of wish I wouldn't have used the guide. I wish I would have maybe just use the guide to see what the first few dungeons are, just so I knew where they were, and then just explore it a little bit. But
it's funny because our mentality about this is like wildly different. Like,
yeah,
I totally understand and appreciate the way you want to play this. Like, I really do.
Yeah,
but it's not how I want to play. How I want to play is like, let's just get this stupid thing done. Cause like, I wasn't as energetic to beat this game as you. I more wanted to beat it for the sake of saying I beat it.
Yeah, I get it.
I've like been roadblocked in the past. So the last thing I want to do is just like, where is it?
Yeah, no, I get that. And like, honestly, dude, that was my mindset too. When I first started it, started the game, I'm like, okay, I just want to beat this. Just get out of the way. But it was after I had, again, like I said, it was after I had done all that collecting and then played the first few dungeons, I'm like,
yeah,
you know what? They could have spread out the collecting. They could have just been like, oh, hey, here, collect just the bomb upgrade because that's the big one you need or whatever.
Yeah.
And then go in the first dungeon. But instead it was like, let's collect all the stuff you need for the first five dungeons and then just do each dungeon all in a row, like bang, bang. I would have. Yeah. I guess I just would have liked them to like spread out the collecting stuff a little more. But at the same time, I totally see why they would make you get all the stuff, because why not? And it's fun to feel powerful and just to get through it. So like, I get that.
Yeah.
I will say it's really nice to have that blue candle. Sorry, what was that?
I still had a lot of trouble regardless.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I also, if I played it again, I would probably try and use the rewind feature a little less.
You could play it on that way. You're just not allowed to, you know?
That's true. Is there a mode where you can just turn it off?
I meant another platform.
That's true.
That's what I meant.
I should actually just...
You got the cartridge. You can just the gold cartridge Nintendo. In.
Yeah, yeah, I just need to get... I mean, those are probably... at least $50 for an NES.
You don't have to get an original. My brother has something called a Retron 5 or something, where it can play Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, Game Boy.
Oh, wow. What?
All on the same console.
That's probably more expensive than an original NES.
It's probably more reliable because those originals kind of broke a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
And I remember those things like glitching out like crazy all the time. But also, like, we had it way after the original came out, like late 90s, and then even a lot later. All right. Hey, before we continue, we've been kind of doing this for
a word from our sponsors.
Yeah, our sponsors. It's me. I'm sponsoring.
If only.
It. Yeah. No.
Volition Software. That's where I work.
Okay.
Makers all right,
let's take a bit of a break because I'm getting a little hot in this room, and I can't open the window because I keep hearing the stupid snowplow coming by.
Yep,
and I'm
same here. Maybe you were hearing mine through the through my microphone.
Alex, we live an hour away from each other.
No, through my microphone. Silly.
No, it was definitely mine. I could see it going by, and I just heard the scraping of concrete.
Yep, it's snowing in Wisconsin today.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yep. I got to refresh my drink and everything, too.
Awesome. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back.
Sounds gouda.
Welcome back. We had a break. We're all refreshed. We've cooled down. We're not overheating anymore. Right?
Some of us. Meanwhile, I had like a hat on because,
yeah. Yeah. Some of us had a spider come into the room, and then now their cat is still searching for it. He got really excited about it.
I think you mean a Skulltula or Skulltula.
Yeah, Skulltula. I've heard.
Skulltula.
Yeah.
Actually, we used to say Skeleta, or at least I did.
I think I always said Skulltula, and I'm pretty sure that's. I don't know which one's right.
You were probably right.
I don't know, man.
I
couldn't, because it's skull and tarantula. That's what it is. So.
Right. Yeah. Basically.
Yeah. And And then bats are keys. Snakes are ropes. Yeah. Just the enemy naming in this in these games is always
snakes
like,
are ropes. I haven't heard that.
Yeah,
one.
Really?
Okay, no.
No way. Are they even in this game? I think they are. They gotta be.
Yeah, I actually got some jasmine tea to warm myself up.
Yeah.
Rather than cool down.
Smart. Well, dang it. Now we got sidetracked. I want to come in and talk about the dungeons. And now I'm looking up what a snake's called.
Meanwhile, while you're looking that up, we had a request from our producer, Reba.
Producer?
Reba J.
Yeah.
No, we were joking about her being our producer because she's kind of listening into this podcast as we're recording it. And I think it'd be cool if she actually had a direct line in so she could kind of...
Because
she was commenting that we weren't talking enough about our actual experience playing it.
Yeah.
You
she
know,
also
but
got really
I
upset
have talked
with my
it.
Pronunciations of all the Japanese names. She was like really mad
yeah,
at me.
Yeah, that was
they were bad. Maybe
a little cringy, not gonna lie.
Well, sorry everyone.
It's okay. Maybe we can go back and fix it in post.
That's fine.
Fix it in post.
Nah, it's fine. Yeah, sure.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, I just found it. Rope, a poisonous snake that has made the labyrinth's home. Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. Weird.
Well, just to talk a bit more about our experience, I'm wondering for you, Justin, what was your favorite boss in the game?
My favorite boss?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's a good question.
And don't say
like
Aquamentus. God damn it.
Aquamentus.
Gosh dang
that
it.
That was an
Golly
easy
G.
one. Golly G.
Aquamentus is like the derpiest dragon ever. He's just like
man,
the basic dragon, right? Like the
yeah, it's basically here's yeah. a dragon.
Yeah,
he's
fire,
like
pop the magic dragon,
stab it a couple times.
Yeah.
There you go.
That was another thing. Like the bosses were just too easy in those first few dungeons. I'm like, I just destroyed that boss.
Really?
Like, in two hits. I wish it would have
taken
more.
Some
things
I found easy, like men. Oh boy, gosh, Manhandala.
Yeah,
oh, God, that's a terrible name.
Yeah, I know.
A large large man-eating flower with head sticking out in all four directions.
See, that one, though, the guy...
If you put the bomb in the right spot, it just dies instantly.
Exactly.
That's,
and the guide told me that.
But it's hard to do that. Oh, it did? I just did it.
No,
then,
the guide tells you that. I'm like, oh, well, that just made it a lot easier. Especially with the rewind feature.
I think the hardest one I had was the Patra. Patra is like...
Yeah, which one is that?
That's like the big eyeball thing with a bunch of small eyeballs circling around it. Do you remember that one?
Yes, that is according to the guide. That was
hard.
Actually that is the hardest boss in the game, according to that guide.
Yeah, Gliok can get kind of hard.
Gliok
is the multi-headed dragon.
Yep, that's
three. You have like
one.
two to four actually.
That and that one he appears multiple times throughout the game. I think like a
all
total,
these guys do really.
Right, that's true. But like he near the end of the game, he's one of the final bosses, and he's like. He is actually pretty hard.
I think my favorite might have been actually Dodongo.
Oh, yeah? Well, because he will eat the bombs. Like, he eats the bombs.
Yeah, but you have to do it just right.
Exactly.
They move in weird patterns. Yep. The guide's labeling it as a giant rhinoceros, which I never...
Really?
Yeah, it says a giant rhinoceros.
I think it's pretty clear in the game that
I
he's just
a
dinosaur.
He's
just a dinosaur.
Yeah, that's weird.
That's
man, we're
I
learning
wonder...
so much. We claim to be Zelda super fans. We don't know Jack.
Yeah,
so...
I know. We got a lot to learn. That's part of the reason we're doing this.
Yeah.
I wonder
a lot
almost
of our listeners
if that's...
don't know this.
Yeah, I almost wonder if that's a translation error, actually.
Rhinoceros?
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe.
And you're reading from the original guide?
Right? Yeah. Well, okay. With minimal edits. That's
yeah,
what it says
okay.
on the thing.
All right. I'm paging through this Zeldapedia to find all the bosses because I actually can't really remember all of them.
I'll list them for you. Mm-hmm. There's, well, is Moldorm considered a boss? I think it's a mini boss.
Which one was he?
It's the worm.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's a mini boss, whatever. I would,
yeah.
Just since there's there are so few bosses in the game, I would count the mini bosses.
Yeah, there's Dodongo, Manhandala. Terrible name. Aquamentus, the dragon. Patra, the eyeball monster.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here's one. I guess this counts as a boss. There's Dig Dodger. that's apparently a sea urchin. It's like, it's the one where like you have to play the flute and then it shrivels up. It's like a big circular thing. You play the flute and then you attack it.
Yes. Yeah, that one was pretty cool.
Yeah. Then there's Goma. That's a spider monster with a giant eyeball.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about that one. I'm just like,
that one was basically you show up, you shoot an arrow, and it dies. You're like, oh.
You know, honestly, I do kind of like Aquaman. Now that I
you think that's your favorite?
Now that I gave you a bunch of crap for like,
I think I like Gleok more than Aquaman.
I mean,
mostly because, and Gleok's, I know everyone's probably sick of me talking about this, but yeah, Cadence of Hyrule. In Cadence of Hyrule, it's not Gleok, it's a Gleokenspiel.
Oh my god, are you serious?
Yeah. I'm dead serious. It's like a big old
Glockenspiel. I do like how creative those games are. Crypt, the NecroDancer games.
Yeah, they're good.
I
keep talking about them, though. Oh, and there's also Ganon.
It's good.
Actually, we should talk about Ganon on his own.
Ganon we'll was so disappointing. I gotta be honest.
Yeah.
Like, really?
It was... Yeah, so Dungeon 8-9,
it was tough,
Death Mountain.
Yeah.
The dungeon itself was pretty difficult. I remember the first time, like I told you earlier, when I was playing it, it was very challenging, and this time wasn't much better, even with the guide, even with the rewind feature. I'm like, this is so hard. Yeah. I was just like sitting there just like clenched up, like I just gotta get through this level. This is the last thing. This is the only thing for preventing me from being a true gamer or whatever.
A true Zelda fan.
True gamer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then like so I get through all that. You get to the final boss. It's like a dark room. And I guess if you don't have the silver arrows, because you need the silver arrows to beat Ganon. If you don't have them, you just can't do it.
Right.
And then you get in there. It's dark. And then he appears. And then there looks like there's like things in the room that would prevent you from walking around, but it's just pretty much a flat surface.
Yep.
And then you shoot him with the silver arrows like a couple times, and then he dies, and you're like, oh.
It's funny how...
I guess that's it.
Yeah.
It's because, like, especially after playing all these other games, we're like, oh, like, wait, like, Twilight Princess, there's like four forms of Ganon right in a row, like a gauntlet of Ganons. And you're like, oh my gosh, there's all this crazy stuff. And then you, and this one, like, ah, here's some silver arrows. I won.
You win. A winner is you. There's not
it's
much.
So weird.
There's not much falling action either after you beat it. It's basically like you walk into the next room
and then
you
Zelda.
Stop Zelda from being possessed or whatever's happening. Like, what's happening after that? When you beat Ganon, you walk into the next room.
She's just sitting there, right?
I thought she was like some kind of magic spell was happening. You actually have to go up and break. You have to like use your sword or something. Man, I swear, there's something like that. It's like you have to actually go up and save her, and then like so that was cool.
Yeah, and then
but after that, it's basically like what?
Yeah, then you hold up a Triforce. She holds up a Triforce. It says thank you for playing or something. Hyrule save.
It's basically
I took a photo. Oh, of this. Okay. Let me find it on my.
It's something like that. It's
it's
very
anticlimactic. Yeah,
but again, I get it. Like it's an old game. I get it.
Oh, here it is. Thanks, Link. You're the hero of Hyrule. Finally, peace returns to Hyrule. The end. Mm-hmm. That's all it says, and it's just you and Zelda.
Yeah,
holding up the Triforce. There's two different Triforces.
Oh, you're holding it together.
Yep.
And there's no Triforce of Courage. It's so weird.
Not in this game. I don't think it shows up until... I don't know. Because I don't think it's in 2. Maybe it is in 2. I don't know anything about 2. That's the problem.
Well, the full Triforce is in Link to the Past.
Yes.
Right.
So it definitely shows up by Link to the Past, but I don't know if it shows up in 2. And it's definitely not in this game. Yeah. Power, Wisdom, Courage, but this time it's just Power and Wisdom.
That's very interesting. We'll have to. We'll just take that puzzle piece, set it aside for now, and maybe we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Why is there no?
Oh, you were talking about bosses. So I have my notes for the dragon. Goma is the boss of the dragon. That's the name of the dungeon. All the dungeons have names. Mm-hmm. They are shaped like what they are named after. Yep. The dragon is shaped like a dragon. And I wrote for there. Goma is comically easy.
Yeah. Just like Aquaman does.
Yeah. All right.
Goma's the one where you hit the eye, right?
Yes, you just shoot an arrow right in its eye, and you're like, all right, yeah, I won.
But when it shows up later, it is a little harder, because it's, like, moving around, it's closing its eye at the hard times, and, like, you have to time your arrow to hit the eye, right?
Yeah, I found that harder, actually, later in... When they use Goma later as a mini-boss in
Dungeon, that's what I'm talking
I found
about.
That one harder, and they use two Gomas in one of them.
Oh, that's
that
right.
one I found harder, but the one where it's just one Goma, pretty easy.
Wait, you want to let Goma?
What?
Let Goma nuts.
Oh God!
Sorry,
Alex.
All right, continue.
Oh my gosh! How long are you holding on to that one?
Oh, I don't know. I just heard it in some other podcast.
Oh, okay. 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 All right.
Not really.
Yeah, so let's see what I got here. Oh, you want to talk about the super weird dungeon?
The Maniji? What?
Do you know what the Maniji is?
No.
That's the third dungeon.
Okay.
Look up the I want you to look up the Maniji dungeon design. Tell me anything weird about it.
How do you spell it?
M-A-N-I... Oh, sorry, it's just Manji. Sorry. M-A-N-J-I.
Okay.
Look this up. What do you see?
I think...
What do
you see? Yeah. Manji. Manji.
I'm not sure. I don't know Japanese.
Hold on. Manji dungeon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely noticed that. It's a swastika.
It's a backward swastika.
It's a backward. It's like it's because the true swastika. Yeah,
it's a Japanese character. So
because
the connotations aren't
Germany
the same here.
Stole it from an older like,
I think from Buddhism
symbol.
Or something.
Yeah, it might be an Eastern culture.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame that they took something.
That
other people used.
I do remember. This is level 3, right?
Yeah, level 3.
I do remember this one as being the first one I actually found a little more interesting.
Okay.
Just because it was a little more challenging, I think it was the first one that had the four headed, you know,
mandala.
Mandala.
I can't believe I can't say this name. The four flowered. Boss thing.
Yeah, it's cool because like there's four branches to the dungeon, there's four heads to the boss, and like there's a cool sandy area.
I didn't put that connection. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and there's like a cool sandy area, which is pretty different from the rest of the dungeons up to that point.
My note says I beat the boss with one bomb somehow. Specifically somehow.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, I'd love to go through each dungeon and just hear your notes on it, but we don't.
They're not super detailed. I mean, the first dungeon's the eagle. That one's interesting. It's got the boomerang and the bow in one dungeon. Like, I'm used to one item, one dungeon.
Yeah, that was crazy. You know?
Yeah, it's weird that it's you like, get both of them right away.
This game almost feels like. It almost feels like a Zelda game they made later on where they were just like, let's throw everything in a big mixing pot and like just see what sticks and just like do some crazy stuff. Like it definitely makes the other Zelda games seem a little more simplistic in certain ways. Just because this one's kind of like, again, it's a lot like Breath of the Wild where you can literally go wherever you want, try doing whatever you want, and you can do it if you're good enough.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to be really, really good. You have to have certain items. That's true.
Yeah, I will never be that good at this game.
We're not Dave Keller.
Dave doesn't claim to be that good either.
That's true.
I'm talking about like speedrunners here. Like, oh, yeah, three hearts, no problem.
Yeah, right.
That's the second dungeon's the moon. That's the one with the dongo. I beat it. I'm also that one shaped like a moon, crescent moon. I beat it one bomb.
Oh.
I don't know. I guess it only takes one.
Which one?
The moon.
Right. Which world is that?
It's two. Number two.
Oh, okay.
Shaped like a crescent moon.
Yeah. What's the boss in that one then?
Dodongo.
Oh, okay. And you beat him in one hit. I'm pretty sure I did.
Yeah, too. I think it only takes one.
Mm-hmm.
It's just hard. It's because he's moving around so sporadically that, you're not really sure to get the bomb in there.
Right.
We already talked about the Manji. The snake. Oh, okay. The snake shaped like a snake, obviously. But something I thought was really cool. Mm-hmm. They used the previous boss as a mini boss in that one. So they're using that like typical Nintendo formula of like, hey, earlier in this game where you beat this guy and it was hard? Well, now he's back and he's a lot easier because you're stronger.
Yeah, right. I mean, this one pretty much made the formula.
Maybe. Parts of it.
A lot of these early games made certain game design formulas that would be used going forward, not only in Zelda games, but other games. I mean, Metroid also. That's why certain games are called Metroidvania, because they pioneered that crap.
Yeah, it's a genre in itself. And Right, exactly. I mean, you have games where, like, something likes. So you got, like, Souls-like, Rogue-likes. Mm-hmm. Kind of is a genre of Zelda-likes, you know?
That's true. I just found an image that like takes all of the maps, all the dungeon maps of each dungeon, and combines it all into one big like
map.
And they all kind of interlock, and it's really cool.
I bet somebody hacked the game that you can do that.
Man, who knows?
And I don't want to do that.
Wait. I think they actually do perfectly interlock like this. That's crazy.
Oh, really?
I'm going to see if I can just copy that and paste it into your Discord.
You should. Yeah,
like I mean, it's not perfect. They don't perfectly interlock, but.
Right.
Where's our chat?
I don't know.
Paste it. I'm using my other computer. Dang it. I'll send it to you later. It's pretty cool.
Okay.
Yeah. I just wanted. The reason I was looking at that was just to remind myself of some of the dungeons and which ones I liked and didn't like.
Because
there were a few. Like, I just remember hating the whiz robes. They were. That was probably the toughest enemy.
Oh my god, I hated the whiz robes. I think
they were the most annoying enemy of all of them.
For those who don't know, the whiz robes would. They appear in a place, shoot magic at you, and then disappear.
Yep.
Those are the orange ones, or the red ones. And then the blue ones are harder. They would sort of like phase in and out of being able to be hit. And then if they are facing you, they will shoot magic at you no matter what. And it sucks so much. Whiz robes are probably the second worst enemy in this game.
Second? I would put him first, to be honest.
You put him first?
Over the my dog is growling right now. It's adorable.
Oh, really?
Navi.
Okay.
Hey. No bark.
No bark.
There she goes.
Are
you referring to the knights or like the Iron Knuckles or whatever?
Dark Knuts.
Iron Knuckles.
Man, those guys made me so angry. Those guys are so hard.
They did, but I felt like with those ones, if I just followed, like if I followed behind them, that was a good way to get them actually.
Yeah.
Cause like, okay. Yeah. Why don't you tell me how you felt about them?
This kind of continues with my bullet hell thing. Mm-hmm. It's just like you'd get there and you're like, all right, I'm going to stab him now. And you just like point out your sword. And then as soon as you do, it feels like the Dark Knuts just rotated at that time. Because if you attack him head on, it makes this irritating clinking noise. Mm-hmm. You're like, ugh. Just hit him, please.
Super irritating. It's like, I can't hit him.
No, and then like they're always right there.
See, but that's great game design.
If you hit them, they usually run into you and hit you, and they do like 3 damage. It's like
tough.
It's a lot, and you're just like, oh God, please no. I rewound so many Dark Knut dungeons, Dark Knut rooms, where I'm like, I don't know how to beat these guys. I did rewind a lot of Wiz Robe guys because.
Yep. I rewound those more, I feel like, honestly.
Only if they had the blue ones. If they had the orange ones, that wasn't too bad. Or the red ones.
And the worst was when like they combined the Wiz Robes with the other enemies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, oh my god.
And then if there's ever a bubble in there, bubbles didn't hurt you. But if they're like little flashy orbs. Mm-hmm. If they hit you, you just can't use your sword.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like... Yep. There's all these guys.
Yep, and of course that name, Bobble. I'm pretty sure that's what the skulls are called in Ocarina of Time, the flying skulls.
Yes, they are.
And
called Bobbles,
and they do the same thing to you. They disable your sword.
So some of them do. I don't think they all do. Yeah.
Well, there's green ones. They just hurt you. But the blue ones, yeah.
But there's also red ones, too.
In Ocarina?
Pretty sure.
That's a good trivia question.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are plain flaming skull. There's green, like the green flame. There's one of those. Green ones.
Yep.
And those are bigger. It's like a huge one. It's in the well, and it's in Ganon's tower.
Yeah, it's crazy how many like enemies are from this game and were made later.
Yeah.
Like Lynels are in this one, Wiz Robes.
Yeah.
Ropes, Keys. Yeah,
there's no Lynels or Wiz Robes in Ocarina of Time. Pretty sure. Is there a Wizrobe equivalent?
There is a Wizrobe in Majora's Mask.
Oh, as a mini boss, but
not as just a basic enemy.
And I guess he does behave similar to the Wizrobes because he's a magic staff or whatever.
I think he's a little more predictable, honestly.
I mean, way more. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This game had so much just like randomness to it. You're just like, I don't know how these enemies are going to react. I had such a hard time figuring out how enemies were going to like proceed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made this maybe even worse than a bullet hell. Because in a bullet hell, it's a linear path. You know where the bullet's going. There's just a lot of them.
Yeah.
But in this one, you're like, I don't know where this thing's going
to
go.
It's chaotic. There's no pattern to it. There's like,
yeah, I don't know when they're going to shoot. Yeah. And like, I mean, probably a lot of it's like due to hardware limitations, but like, man, I was clenching so many times.
Or decisions made by the programmers.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You were clenched.
Yeah, clenched up, man.
Yeah.
One of my notes on here for one of the dungeons for the lizard, I just wrote, cheated a bunch really hard.
Yeah.
And I think that's the dungeon with the pole's voice or the... Yeah, that's the rabbit ear enemy that's just hops around and stuff.
Oh, yeah, those are fun. They can be killed with arrows. Actually, did you know that?
Maybe.
Like, the arrows are the only item that will actually kill them fairly easily. Or the sword, I think. But that's it.
Well, you have to use the flute to kill them. Wait, hold on.
Does that help or something?
Okay, so in the original Famicom for Japan... The controller had a microphone on it. Did you know this?
That's right.
So if you wanted to kill these monsters, the pole's voice in the game, the only way you could beat it was literally by screaming into your controller.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they couldn't do it in the American version because there's no microphone on that controller. Because, like, why would you even need it, honestly?
I know. That's probably why they made arrows the other way to kill it.
Yeah, well, actually, what they do is if you have the flute, it'll stun them.
Oh, it stuns them.
Yeah, so the flute normally lets you teleport, but if you went up against the pole's voice, it would stun them. And same with that boss I was talking about earlier. What's it called? It's called the Dig Dogger. The only way you could kill that is if you had the flute, and then it became vulnerable enough to actually hit.
Yeah,
but in the Japanese version, you just yell in the microphone.
That's interesting.
Isn't that nuts?
Zelda was pioneering from such an early age.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, pretty crazy. Cool, though. Yeah.
What are they called? The pole's voice?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, that's another question where I'm like, what? Where are they?
I don't know how they name some of these. Like,
is it a is this a translation thing? Because at first I thought you said like Poe, like Poe's voice.
Oh yeah, those are in this game, but
the ghosts in the cemetery?
Yeah, those are Poe's.
Yeah, I felt that part was kind of weird. Like, isn't that the only part of the game those ghosts are in?
Yeah, and you're not there very long.
Exactly. It's like, on the other hand, I was surprised that they even had like a cemetery. Like, that's another. There's another part of the formula for Zelda that started in this game, the cemetery.
Yeah. Totally.
So that's cool.
Yeah. And then, let's see. Okay. So in the demon is a.
Yeah. That's one of the latter dungeons.
Seventh dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
You need a piece of bait to get past a moblin. Like, there's a rumor. Oh, there's just a moblin in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just says growl. And you have to, like, buy bait.
Yep.
And this is the guy I remember the most. There's like a shopkeeper mm-hmm. whose line is just, "Boy, this is really expensive."
Yeah.
And you're like, right. Yeah. And I had to grind so hard to get the money yeah. for that one. And because yeah. if you don't get it, you just can't complete the dungeon mm-hmm. or you couldn't get the item. I don't exactly remember, but
the guide definitely helped me out with that part of the game.
Yeah, I was strapped for cash like crazy. Like, I couldn't there was a bomb upgrade in that dungeon that I just straight up couldn't afford. And I actually didn't have
that problem.
Because I grinded so hard for that bait,
mm-hmm.
and then grinded enough rupees,
mm-hmm.
and then I just didn't have enough for the bomb upgrade, and I just skipped it. And I'm like, well, I guess I'll just never get that. And it sucks that the rupee counter only goes to 255. You can't get more than 255 rupees. And that's like a programming reason. And like, I know me and you in the past have complained about rupee limits, but this one is due to just like a programming limitation, you know?
Yeah.
So,
you know, on that note, I don't mean to cut you off if you have
that's fine.
Continuation there, but I do have the Zeldapedia open again. Actually, it's just called the Zelda Encyclopedia. I'm calling it the Zeldapedia.
This is an actual print novel book from Dark Horse that you can buy if you want.
And there's three of them. One is an encyclopedia. One is a book of just art, I believe. And one's highly a story about the timeline story.
Super yeah, I have up. All three of them too.
But I opened up to the section about the developer notes and development documents from the game.
Oh, okay.
And something we were talking about earlier is confirmed, because it's saying dungeon layout, levels 1 through 6. Storing data for the game's sizable dungeon maps meant using the same 16x8 block layout as the overworld map. For efficiency's sake, the maps for levels 1 through 6 were designed to fit together on the same grid, almost like a puzzle.
With the
extra blocks used to store the data for underground areas like treasure rooms and passages connecting certain dungeon rooms.
Oh, that's so crazy.
So there's an image here that I wish people could see, but it's literally, the 1 through 6, so not including other dungeons, but just the first 1 through 6 literally fit together like a block. And it looks like they use the swastika dungeon, whatever. What was that one called?
Manji.
Yeah, they probably just started with that and then built around it to fill up the rest of the block. Because just again, the way the game stored the data, that was the most efficient way to do it.
That kind of leads me to a different question I had, because, we're getting kind of close to it, but did you try your hand at Second Quest at all?
No.
So for those of you who don't know, Second Quest is...
It's different.
After you beat the game, they're like, hey, do you want to play this again, but even harder? And I said, absolutely not. I'm good.
Yeah.
But the dungeon design is completely different in Second Quest. Because instead of spelling out the... Or instead of showing the monsters or the beast that the dungeon represents, they spell out Zelda, Z-E-L-D-A. So I'm wondering...
What?
Yeah, for real. It's in that book you're reading right now. If you go to the dungeon section, you can see it.
Yeah?
Yeah, go look for it.
You were saying what spells out Z-E-L-D-A?
The again? Dungeons do.
Oh.
Yeah, so in this one, like in the quest that we played, it looks like a lion, it looks like a snake, it looks like a lizard. These all spell out Zelda.
So they're... Okay. Wow, that's cool. I'm still not seeing the image, but...
It's in the dungeon section. You're not in the right spot. Okay.
I'm in the archives right now. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's in the front. I have to find it. We have some really fun dead air right here. How about
history
that?
And records.
It's in the database.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Well, I mean, those of us at home listening to this podcast won't be
able to... I found it. For you, it's page 145.
145.
Yeah.
Turn to page 145. There's a Harry Potter reference.
Sure.
145?
Pretty sure.
Dungeons. You're right.
On the right.
It spells out Zelda?
Yeah.
Where?
Do you not see it? Okay, so
are you looking at it?
It's not in order, but look.
Oh, level 5 Z-E-L-D-A. Is a Z. Okay, I see.
Level 1 is an E. Level 3 is an L.
Yeah. Okay.
Level 4 is a D. Gotcha. Level 2 is an A, and then
interesting.
I don't know what the heck 6, Z? 7, and 8 That's are supposed hilarious. To be.
So these are the way the dungeons are laid out in the second quest.
Yep.
Weird. There's just an L dungeon.
Yeah, second quest is some crazy stuff.
That's probably
there's like,
hard as heck.
Oh, yeah. There's like a point in the game where the only way to get through an I this is the only thing I really remember. The only way you can get through
holy crap
a dungeon room is if you give up permanently a heart. Like a whole heart.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. This is the only way you can
that's
get through the room.
Sacrifice this to continue.
Yeah.
That's like that reminds me of the statue from Breath of the Wild where you sell him your soul. You sell him part of your heart.
Yeah, you sell a heart piece.
What's that statue called?
I don't know. That thing's freaky.
It is freaky, and I love the atmosphere around when you go towards it. That is super cool, though. I didn't know they implemented that mechanic in the second. The second quest?
Yep.
Like, is it like you talk to someone and they say to continue, you must...
No, basically after the credits, like, start a second quest.
No. Like, I mean, I'm talking about this part... In the second quest, where you have to give up a heart to continue.
Oh, yeah, there's like an old man in there or something.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I love that. See, that is storytelling through game design. Love
it. No, that's punishment, my friend. Man, I have no desire to ever play second quest. I don't know anyone who's beaten second quest. I don't
just
even know.
Talking about it, though, makes me want to play it.
Now, are you, like, considering doing it now?
Maybe, if I have time. Let's just say
if
that.
You have time?
Because,
oh, man.
Like, I don't. Man, getting through Adventure of Link is going to be...
I don't know if we'll beat Adventure of Link. I will try.
How much you want to bet? I'll take that as a challenge.
We bet rupees on this podcast. And,
I know.
So, 99.
99
rupees. I only got a child wallet.
Yeah, I don't think either of us have the adult's wallet yet in this podcast.
Yeah, and we're in our 30s. We don't have an adult money. That's not true. Took a big drink right there. Good time for that joke.
Yeah. Always good comedic timing on my part.
Well, it's been really funny for me to see you spit that everywhere.
Spit take.
Yeah.
Not the best time for
that. Great.
All right. Well, did we leave anything out? Is there any closing
not really.
Thoughts?
I don't have any more notes from the game, and we've been talking for quite a while.
Could have talked more about, and maybe we can touch on it again later, is just the... Just the vibe of this game, as far as the story points that it does bring up when you're playing it, because like, and we did touch upon it, but just looking at the old art from this game, it's like the art that released with the game does also make it seem like this kind of dark world that Link is going through, and there's just a lot of dangers that are huge, to be honest, just big and scary, and like Link is this little guy who's surmounting all this stuff and getting through it.
I like about this game is, especially if you read the manual, like Link isn't like when they made this game, Link isn't like some destined hero. It's just some guy that Impa found.
He's just a little guy, like a little leprechaun dude.
The leprechauns weren't all green.
Basically.
Designed after Peter Pan.
Well, yeah,
literally.
That was a big influence.
Yeah.
It was, I think. I think he's even said that.
I'm pretty sure it's confirmed.
But, like, that first little bit of storytelling, the it's dangerous to go alone, take this. Like, it makes you feel small. It makes you feel like you are not equipped for this until you take this. And you don't even have a shield after that. And you have to find the shield, and it's... Excuse me,
don't you start with a shield?
Maybe you do start with the shield. I can't remember. But that shield, I gotta say, is worthless until you get the bigger shield.
Oh, so you know Like-Likes?
Yeah.
So Like-Likes, who you don't know, they look like a stack of pancakes in this game. Like, not
even
kidding.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
There are other ways to describe it that are not as pleasant.
Alex.
Yeah.
If they get you, they will eat your upgraded shield. And there were times where I got eaten by the lake, and I got back out, and I'm like, oh, I lost my shield. And I just kind of stood there for a second. And I'm like, I am not grinding. I just rewound the game so I didn't lose my shield. Because I cheated like crazy in this game. I really did. I know there's purists out there like, how dare he? And you know what? You're right. But also, I don't care.
You know, I just found one of my old CRT TVs that I used to play these games on.
Oh, yeah?
And it's a fairly small one. The screen is probably, I want to say 24 inches, maybe 32. But
decently big for a tube TV.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay. It's probably like 26 then. It's not huge. I mean, it's like a big computer monitor, you know?
Okay.
And, so at some point I will have to get an NES and just, cause I have that gold cartridge that my good friend Austin Adamson, entrusted me with. He was like, I need to get rid of this. Do you just want it?
Oh,
so I have his gold cartridge for Zelda. So I do need to play that at some point, and I'll probably just plug it into my CRT I have and do it the pure way, like
the pure way.
I think I'm going to have to do that, especially now that I kind of know the game. Yeah. Now that I know the game and know some of the secret things and that make it a little easier, like maybe I can do it now.
I think what's funny is just sort of the conclusion we came back to. Came to for individually, because I'm sort of like, I'm good not playing this game again. I think this game is
you important. Squeeze the juice. Yeah,
I think this game is important. I think it's well designed, especially for the time. But I'm good. Like I did it. I can tell everyone I did it. People can be proud of me. But, like, you're having, like, a completely different reaction than me.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I do feel that partially. Like, I do feel like it was a big challenge, and I'm proud of being able to say that I beat it. But
yeah,
I also know that I cheated. And I want to do it without cheating, because I do believe and I'm not trying to take away from your victory in the game. Like,
no,
like we discussed, I mean, it's a ridiculously unnecessarily hard game. And like using that function actually does help you enjoy it more. So I feel like we both enjoyed it and, you know, we beat it, but I'm just saying, like, I do feel like one more time, I'm interested to see the differences between the original game and the Switch port. And I know they're probably almost identical, but I'm interested to just see how it looks on the CRT TV.
Yeah. Well, if you ever do, maybe we'll cover that sometime.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. But for now, we can call it good.
This is getting long. We need to...
We're good.
Yeah, we need to cut this down so we can... Or we need to wrap this up so people can be like, oh, thank God, and I can listen to other podcasts.
We're probably around 2 hours, aren't we?
Hour 40.
That's
maybe
fine.
I'll chop off some stuff, but anyway, so let's talk about what we're going to be doing in the future. Try to make this short. So next episode, we're not going to be covering a game in its entirety because we do not have the time to play a game every episode. That's too much. We have a lot of other stuff going on in our lives that's just not practical, especially when these games get longer, or especially when it's Zelda 2 and we don't know what we're doing. So next week we're going to try some stuff. We're going to try ranking overworld music from the game. We're going to look through all the overworld music from every Zelda game, and we're going to rank them in terms of just how good we think they are. It should be a good time, and you can listen along with us and be like, oh yeah, I agree with him. Oh no, these guys are lunatics. Like, how dare they?
Breath of the Wild or Breath of the Wild. Wind Waker ocean overworld music.
Yeah.
Because no one got sick of that music.
Da-na-na-na-na-na.
Yeah, it's a little preview for you.
Yeah, we'll play them. We'll play them on air or on record or whatever. And
on the eye, see?
Yeah. All right. And then after that, we're going to be, and this is so you guys can play along with us. During this next month, we're going to be playing The Legend of Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. and you can play that the same way you played this game on the Nintendo Switch if you have online. It's right there for you. You can play it. You can be one of 10 people who played it, probably. Just kidding. There's people who've played this game. You can play it on original Nintendo. You can play it on the Triforce Collection for the GameCube. You also might be able to play it... what is it called? They had, like, this Zelda Game & Watch thing that I think had Legend of Zelda 1 and Zelda 2 on it. I don't know much about it, but maybe you already have it.
An actual Game & Watch thing?
It's not an actual one. It's basically... it looks like a Game Boy Micro.
Yeah. I remember when that came out. I had a
Game Boy Advance Micro. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, because I had a Nintendo Power subscription, and they were heavily advertising that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, maybe I'll get it, but I don't have any money, really. So.
Yeah. There also might be some other ways to play it, but I don't know. Figure it out yourself.
Oh, yeah. A quick note on the game.
Oh, sure.
In the previous episode, I had said that our buddy AJ Shu may have beaten it and was pretty good at it, but I was not correct in that assumption.
Yeah.
He's never even played it.
We carpooled up to our thing this past weekend.
The Rose weekend.
And he was giving us a review. He's just like, hey, it was pretty good, but why do you guys think I beat Zelda 2? I don't think I've ever played it.
Never even touched the game.
What Alex said. I don't know why I thought that, but...
Because I could have sworn I remembered him being able to, fight Dark Link and how you can, cheese it into the corner and just beat the crap out of him.
No, I don't, actually.
Oh, spoilers. That's a really easy way to beat the final boss is, by just trapping him in a corner and just slashing at him or whatever.
Yeah. So we'll try our darndest to beat this game. I do not guarantee that I will beat this game, but I'm going to try real hard. I'm definitely going to... I'm not going to phone it in. I'm not going to, get to the first area and be like, ugh, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to give it a real college try.
Yeah, those knights or whatever they're called are notoriously hard in the game. Okay. Where they, swing their sword at you, in a certain way, which...
Yeah.
I'm sure you know a little bit about it, but it's hard. Hard game.
Yep.
10 out of 10.
All right, anything else you want to tell the fine folks at home before we sign off?
Don't think so.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us. Tune in next time as we rank the overworld music. And as always, we will... Oh, boy. Good job, Justin. You didn't run out.
I appreciate your attempt at...
yeah. Here, let me read a quote. Please cut this down. Yeah. Here we go. In the words of the old man, Dig Dogger hates certain kind of sound. Bye.
See ya.